Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. This week on the David Mead podcast, I speak with Melanie Kawa. Mel's got a great story of resilience and never giving up. Her journey from Papua New Guinea to making it as co-captain of the Melbourne Rebels women's side is very inspiring. I hope you enjoy this chat. Mel, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we've got a kind of a similar story in that we grew up in Papua New Guinea, the early part of our childhood. Now we enjoy playing sport at a high level here in Australia. So I want to talk a lot about that, your experience in PNG in Australia and the little time you spent in France and, you know, what rugby is like. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Mitty, first time, long time. I have been a huge fan of yours for ages, and I really have found it funny that we haven't really met yet, but as you'll see, we've probably chased each other around the world a bit.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what we can dig up here and share to our small community.
Sure.
What was your experience like growing up in PNG?
Oh, I was born and raised. I always say that in PNG. I love it. My father's Papua New Guinean, and it was my mother that actually was a teacher back in the late 70s and 80s, and she made the big trip up to the jungle to meet my dad, who was like a maths teacher, and she's a home ec teacher. So my father's from Yalibu in the Southern Highlands province. So I was born in Mendi. Mendi General Hospital was a huge hospital at that time. But I grew up in Lae, in Moranbah province, and I just had, you know, this dream childhood. If you can imagine, just like a friendly, loving, communal childhood where like you're just barefoot running around until like the sun came down or the mozzies came out or the frogs start like going off. That's when you knew you had to go back inside. And obviously I come from a huge family. My grandfather had three wives. Obviously, you know, in PNG you can polygamies, you know, for the culture, for the tribe. And so he's one of like 20 brothers and sisters, and they've all got cousins. So I've got like hundreds of cousins. And so for me and my younger brother, I have one younger brother. He's only a year younger than me. So we were just like two best friends growing up in paradise. And I really, really loved my schooling. We went to an international school because my mother's a teacher. And the kids that I met there, not only did we have like national kids from PNG, but we also had this like incredible mix of international students. Like growing up, my best friend was Ghanaian. I had a Filipino best friend, an Australian best friend, a Russian, an Iranian best friend. Like it was crazy. So I think, Papua New Guinea, just a glorious childhood, really like a big melting pot of cultures and in this beautiful land. And I miss it a lot, and I haven't been back in like, you know, because of COVID and just the distance and things like that. I haven't been back in about 5 or 6 years. So as soon as the borders let me go, I'm going to be up there.
When you did go back to Lae, did you notice much change, or was it always pretty similar?
You know what? I saw a pothole. Rainy Lae has not changed in like 30 years. I'm as old as me. I'm 35. So every time I go there, you know, you can count on the roads being bugger up and the rain rolling at like 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, I feel a bit sorry for it because all the spotlight's been on Moresby for maybe, the better part of the last century. So it needs development.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's still that like beautiful sort of untouched tropical jungle type of sense, and still very busy city. It's huge. It's a big port city, kind of similar to Cairns actually. They're sister cities, and it was kind of a transition for me. But at least it went from Lae when I moved to Cairns, when I moved to Australia when I was 14. It was similar weather, but like very different, obviously.
Yeah, Lae does really have that tropical feel about it. I remember we played a game there in 2011 against the Australian Prime Minister's side, and when we landed, I think normally it would take maybe 10 minutes to get from the airport to the town. But I think it took us about 45 minutes.
We're just like going
zigzag the whole way. And it was, I remember the game being so humid. I felt like I was just running in slow motion the whole time because just the humidity coming off the ground. But the weather was beautiful. The people were beautiful. You know, the people in the hotel are so nice, the staff. And in saying that, we did have a few incidents where when we were playing on the field, a couple of rocks were being thrown from outside.
I was going to say, I'll stop you right there. I know exactly what you're going to say. Some fond memories were like my dad going to a rugby league game and then like bringing home a bunch of like people that had like run because there was a big riot or like the two sides just collided on each other in the field because they're so passionate about rugby league, you know. It's like live and die by that sort of stuff. And yeah, we would be to bring home these like rugby league refugees to stay the night because everyone was running from the riot. But anyways, it's very passionate people and yeah, very league heavy, as yeah. you know.
And I think it was the people who they got upset because, you know, there was no tickets to get inside the stadium.
That'd be right. And there's not enough space in the trees.
Oh,
they
couldn't see them. Yeah, they're probably trying to throw rocks at them so they could fall off and take their spot. But
fun times.
Yeah. Do you remember the day you moved to Australia?
Yeah, so my mother's Australian, so we would go every 2 years for a holiday. So like once in the village, 1 year in the Christmas in the village in Yalibu, and the next year it was in country New South Wales, Wagga Wagga, because my mother is from New South Wales heartland, Temora. It's just an hour away from Wagga.
Yeah.
So I knew about Australia and obviously that culture, it was obviously a culture shock every time I left PNG to come to Australia. But that moment when we moved and we kind of like left PNG behind was like a real devastating day for me. I remember my brother and I think it felt like 6 months I cried every night. I said, I don't like it here. Everyone's just too different. And I wasn't used to sort of being without my protective family unit and all the friends that I've grown up with. But I knew, I knew deep down in my teenage years that it was the best opportunity for my brother and I for schooling, you know, just other opportunities that you wouldn't normally get in New Guinea. Yeah. And so after a while, I sort of acclimatized or something, got used to it. But we obviously kept going back and forth to New Guinea as often as we could. But then that sort of slowed up a little bit. But yeah, I found myself living in Cairns and going to high school there. And it was full of PNG people. After a while, I found them all out. They were all at Rusty's Market selling buai. So I found my crew and I had a really, really fun high school as well. Very, very sportive.
Yeah. What was Wagga like? I think we played a city-country game there, I'm pretty sure.
They're diehard as well. Let me tell you. I mean, Wagga is the home of Sterlo. I think Daly's just from down the road, Junie. Trent Barrett and his whole family's from Temora, where my mum grew up. So, I think you could tell whether I'm a Blues or Maroon supporter here, but it's Origin, so I had to go for Blues. I grew up being obsessed with the New South Wales Blues. And when I say obsessed, I mean like wear it on your chest thing, which was so hard for me in Cairns. If you can imagine when Queensland went on that run for like 9 years, every day going to school was terrible.
Yeah, that'd be pretty tough. I remember Ricky Stewart saying a quote, I saw it read in the newspaper. He was talking about PNG and he said, there's two types of Papua New Guineans, a Queenslander and a New South Welshman.
That's exactly right. It's like from birth, you choose and then you stick with it and then pots and pans flying, everything goes for life. And I still am. So regardless of, you know, moving to Cairns and then later Brisbane, you'd think that would be my state of origin, but no, you got to go back to Aspless times and it's definitely country New South Wales.
And what was your experience like in Cairns in high school? Did you know you were going to play rugby then or were you kind of
absolutely
more focused on
not
studies?
So Cairns is, I guess it wasn't that big on rugby union. Probably is much better now, but you know, for, you know, a young girl growing up, I had netball. So I really threw myself into netball and tried to play it as competitively as I could. I had played netball in Lae for Moorabool Province. So it was like I leapfrogged in it and tried to do my best with it there. Unfortunately, though, a bit too short. The Highlands jeans really came good for me there. But also I had a knee injury when I was about in year 12, I think, or late year 11. And I didn't realize I had done my ACL. But like, back then, physio wasn't even a thing in my mind as well.
Yeah.
So I sort of twisted my knee playing netball and then just didn't do anything about it for like 8 years.
And that's and when I you did your ACL.
It must have been like, I remember the game I played and my knee did this.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know what ACLs were.
Yeah.
I didn't have that physio background. This is the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So I kind of gave up netball and I moved to Brisbane for university, which is where I found rugby union.
How'd you come across rugby union? You didn't want to try a league yet?
You know what? That's another thing. I went to university and unfortunately, I guess that I didn't actually see it too much. I should have tried league, but I didn't know where to find it. And it was at university where another PNG girlfriend of mine, one talk of mine, she was playing rugby union. And she said, Mel, she conned me actually. She said she was at market day and she was like, Mel, no one's signing my sheet. Like, can you come pretend? I signed it. She was like, you have to come down now. So I went down to play for the University of Queensland, Red Heavies Rugby Football Club in 2006. And yeah, maybe it was that in the blood thing about the physicality of it, about the tackle technique, all that stuff. I was obsessed with being able to like use my body because,
yeah,
you know, I'm short and there wasn't too much of it, but I really, with the technical side of it, I really fell in love with the contact sport of rugby and rugby union. And yeah, I unfortunately never tried league, but you never know.
That's
maybe
right.
There's still time.
I was just curious. That's right. I think you've chosen the right path. So when you first played, what year was that?
2006. I'm really showing my age now. Yeah.
When did you start feeling like you could make it a bit more professional? Because I'm not really too familiar with the women's game. You know,
I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, this should be the big education podcast for me and those who don't know. For the last 5 years or beyond that, I haven't really known too much about it.
Yeah, right. I fell into a bit of luck here because the University of Queensland Rugby Football Club is like a wallaby factory. You know, it has over 100 year history, 110 year history, I think, of just having like, you know, captains of Wallabies and Reds players and everything. And it had this winning culture about it. So I think I fell into, fortunately, one of those elite level clubs just by chance. And I remember just joining for fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, I was in uni, I had my last year to go, and I just wanted to like get around the girls and play this contact sport. And it was really, really fun. And I really just did it. And my knee was still a bit sore because I had blown it out and I didn't do anything about it. So I would just play. I played for about 3 or 4 seasons. And then it was one coach, Jerry Scott, his name was, he tapped me on the shoulder around 2010. And he said, look, I think you should go and get your knee fixed because if you do that, you have the potential. He's like, he just sort of saw something in me. He goes, I think you have the potential to possibly, you know, play for Queensland or whatever you want. And then I kind of got serious on it. So I booked in at the local hospital and then I got my knee fixed. And a year later, I trained the hardest I'd ever trained before. You know, I was down doing extras early. And there was one girl in the team who was a Wallaroo. That's the national team.
Yeah.
Wallabies and Wallaroos.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a Wallaroo and I used to follow her and I was like, I'll do everything you need me to do. And I got really good, only to come back a year after my first knee injury and do my other knee.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was really deflating. And I had been playing and trying so hard to get into the state team and I was making shadow and all this stuff. And then I did my other knee and I was like, I need a time out. So what I actually did was I moved to the US. I moved to Brooklyn, New York City, and I just played for fun. I played, a year of rugby with just a group of girls that I found in New York, and it really, like, invigorated my joy for playing rugby rather than being so serious about it. Mind you, this is just social. It's not paid or professional or anything. It's literally I just saved up all my coins, and I took a one-way flight to New York City, and I just played for Brooklyn. And then when I came back, that same coach was like, are you ready now? And I had 2 brand new knees and I said, let's go. And I just gave it my everything, and not just on the field, but off the field. I became like the club captain. and I was the one, my friend, the one that signed me up, I became her, and I was out there just picking girls out in the university. I'm like, oh, you come and play. And I became, it was like a huge part of my life. And then representative honours, fortunately for me, came. So I started playing for Queensland, sevens and 15s, and just have never looked back of trying to like chase how good can I get now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a bit difficult because women's rugby is not really set up like that, or it wasn't back then.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but in terms of your career, so from playing for Queensland sevens and 15s, how many years was that for?
So I made the sides in 2013 and 14, I think. Yep.
And then you spent some time in France?
Yeah.
What
So I'll
was that
tell you the
like?
story. Yeah. So I really appreciate these questions too. I love talking about this. I remember I trained my absolute ass off, sorry. And then I made the in 2013 I made the Wallaroo Wider training squad. And I was like, this is it. This is my dream. I'm going to do it. Because the 2014 World Cup was in France. And I had just like tunnel vision. I was like, I'm going to make this World Cup side in 2014. I didn't. I was in the wider squad, and I guess I wasn't loud enough, and no one knew who I was. And I'm not even claiming to be good enough for that side. What I'm saying is I wasn't ready. I felt like I was good, but I wasn't ready. And it was the most devastating rejection. I mean, I've dated a lot of guys that have dumped me, but this was the worst pain that I've ever felt from being rejected. And I made up my mind. I said, I'm gonna do it a different way. I said, it's okay. And so I watched the whole World Cup in France from Brisbane, and I was just watching them. And that year, the Wallaroos actually finished fifth, I think, or sixth, and that all the top five teams were Northern Hemisphere teams. And I was like, that's it. I said, I'm moving. So again, kind of similar, like when I did my second knee and I just like racked off to America, I said, this is rejection, this is pain, but I'm going to go find another way out. So I put together, that time nobody was recording games. Like we didn't have video. We never even played on the main field for them to record us. So I said, everyone who like had iPhone or camcorder stuff, I was like, send me all my footage. I'm going to chop it up. And I made myself like a little YouTube highlights reel
That
and
is
I shopped
awesome,
it.
Matt.
Yeah. I shopped it to like New Zealand teams, like England teams. And then there was this one team in France at the World Cup. France, it was in France, and I just loved the way they played. They were so, because I'm a forward, I play flanker. They were so forward oriented. Whereas in the Southern Hemisphere, for the women's game, it's so like the ground is harder, so that it's a faster, quick game. So it really suits the backs. But all in the Northern Hemisphere, as you know, it's like forward sent like
Heavier
Kevin.
ground,
So
yeah.
I was like, I'm gonna go to France. So the likes of like Safi Ndiaye, Gael Mignon, I just wanted to go and play with those forwards. So yeah, I sent in my broken French. I sent them an email and my little link to the YouTube, and they didn't get back to me. England, there was a team in like middle of England, some really wet, dreary town, and they were like, we'll take you, Mel. And I was about to sign a contract to go and play in England when I got an email from the French president of the Montpellier Rugby Club, and he was like, we would love to have you if you can just get here. So I sold everything. I didn't really have that much adult furniture, but I sold everything, car, everything, and then I just again, one way ticket to France, and they were just during pre-season. If you don't know, in the French competition was the top 10 teams, and they played like 6 months. It was so much rugby, whereas in Australia, it's one weekend a year
Yeah.
if you want to play state. So I was like, this is heaven. So I went over there, I moved to Montpellier, the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life. Did not speak fluent French. I knew a little bit. None of my teammates spoke English, but every day, I'm talking every training session, I learned something, converted an opportunity, and I felt like I was starting rugby from scratch.
Yeah.
And yeah, being in the south of France too is pretty nice.
It is, that is a really nice spot there. And Montpellier is 2 hours away from Perpignan, which is where we were based.
When yep, I was playing I remember going and watching a game of Paul Leiton's game.
Oh, yeah.
And I think was it Greg Bird or someone else?
Yeah,
was there?
He was over there too.
Yeah, they were running it.
Yeah, that was at Perpignan. You watched the game there?
Yep.
Perpignan. How was your French over there? Did you?
Yeah, no. Oui, je parle français maintenant. Oui.
Oh, c'est très bien.
It gets better when I'm drunk, but anyway.
Actually, you know what? I looked up the stats on the podcast listeners, and I think there was like maybe 1 or 2% from France. And I don't know if that's my French teammates listening in, or there's a few Papua New Guineans over there tuning into the podcast. So.
You know, maybe they'll understand be everywhere. You know, there's so many in England now. That isn't Hull FC just like half the Gorica team?
Yeah, there's a lot of Papua New Guineans in England as well.
Stanley Gannett, all them, they're doing well.
Yeah, and they're still over there running the show there. There's some good stories about them from the boys. So how long did you spend in France?
So, I actually, my father got sick, so I was over there from about May 2015, and then in February my father fell ill, so I left and I came back to Leigh. I went to Leigh to visit him, and thankfully he's okay. He had a really, really bad bout of tuberculosis, so it was really touch and go there. So when I went back, I don't know, I think I just missed home a lot. So I went back to France and I completed the season. So I was there for 12 months and we went to the grand final and we played in Paris and we lost. So I felt really like, oh, sad. But then, you know, I was really homesick by that time and I'd had a fantastic experience. Honestly, it was so challenging, but the most rewarding experience I've ever done in terms of my rugby. And so I moved back. I moved back to Brisbane in 2016 with a lot more just experience and confidence of playing like regular high performance competitive rugby at that national level in like a professional environment. So,
yeah, so
I came back to Australia with so much like enthusiasm for trying to do that same thing that I felt in France here in Australia.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible because, you know, just to look at something and go, there's my opportunity over there. I'm going to pack up and go. I don't know if many people have the courage to just do that suddenly, but, you know, you sound like a type of person who just goes and just, you know, dives in and, you know, especially like, you know, picking up French as well. That was like 1 year and you were able to pick up a fair bit.
Well, I had no choice, man. I was living with roommates and like we were just playing charades for the first 3 months. I was like, plug, plug, and they just didn't know what I was talking about. So, and then I was like, I've got to learn this now.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, and so when you got back to Oz, you obviously joined another team.
Yeah, so I feel a bit like special, but I just came straight off the plane and into the Queensland team. The coach there had been watching my progress and watching my games in France. And she was like, yep, you're in form, because it was just right on the back end of the grand final. And so I went to nationals and, you know, played my guts out, but I didn't get in the Wallaroo squad again. And then I got a little bit flat again, you know, that old rejection of not ever.
How do you handle that? How did you deal with it?
Yeah, no, again, like seriously tough news but this time I think I didn't just have blinders on because I had done that and got rejected for the 2014 World Cup. So, you know, when I didn't make the 2018 World Cup team or whatever, I kind of was like, I'll do it a different way again. So, but that time I threw my sights to PNG. I was like, oh, I've tried it twice here now for the Wallaroos and I didn't get in. And back then they had the eligibility rule where if you go and you play for another country's union, then you can't play for Australia again. They've just changed that as of like last week. So if you can spend 3 years not playing for another union, you can then join Australia.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just had all this passion and nowhere really to express it. And then at that exact moment, the Papua New Guinean team was creating the very first 15s women's team, so the inaugural women's team. and the sevens team were picking up again. So I jumped at that opportunity and was really fortunate enough to captain the very first PNG women's 15s game in Fiji in 2016, which was a really spiritual, nice moment for me from where I grew up, where I started, where my love of sport began. And after all the experiences, like, I felt like, right, I know what to do now. I'm going to go back and I'm going to try and bring PNG rugby to a level that, you know, we can be proud of. And I ended up playing for 3 years for the sevens, for the Palais team, and for the 15s.
Yeah, the whole captaining the country experience, it's pretty indescribable. You know, when you were saying that, I was getting goosebumps.
I remember you captaining as well. And I thought you did such a great job. You had such a level head there at fullback. And then I just remember you like steering it. But what really shone through when I watched you captain, I actually remember this. I'm not making it up. Were your like second efforts. I think you had like some try-saving tackles in that game. And I was like, this man is putting on for his country. And it was so inspiring, Meaty.
Yeah, your energy is just, you don't need to try and work for it. You're just energized whenever you put that jersey on. I wish that happened for every single game I played over here in Oz, you know. but yeah, for some reason, you put that PNG jersey on, and the whole family thing comes in into your mind, and you just try and leave everything out there on the field, as most of the boys do in the team. Your time in Melbourne, how's that been?
I have loved it. I kind of came here doing the exact same thing that I did the last two times when I went to the US and I went to France.
How do you settle in when you do? You kind of just dive straight in.
You just find a rugby club. Just like, hey, rugby club, boom, 20 mates. Like,
straight away.
Straight away. It's so fantastic.
It's a good tip for anyone moving cities to join like a club, community, whatever it is. Get friends straight away.
Highly recommend. Absolutely. And then, I don't know, I'm trying to be humble about this, but like, you don't spend so many years. So at that time, when I just moved down, I think I'd played 15 years of rugby. And, you know, you become somewhat of like a subject matter, not an expert, you're never like the best player in the world, but you have so much of this experience and knowledge. And then you've got someone joining rugby, never played before. And then you have like a gift and you feel valuable. You feel like, you know, you're in your element and you can serve someone else and give them that same sort of joy and, you know, learning opportunity. So as much as I, you know, love playing rugby still and going that, I also love like teaching other people, making sure that they have a really good go of it. So how I moved to Melbourne was I played 3 years with the Papua New Guinea Sevens team, and I was a bit broke after France, so I just had to work a little bit. And I was working a lot. And a friend of mine in Melbourne who used to play at UQ sent me a message and say, hey, I noticed, you know, you're taking a break from rugby. Are you playing for anyone in the Aon Sevens tournament? And Aon Sevens, I don't know whether you know, but Sevens rugby in Australia, about 10 years ago, they turned it professional. They actually took like the best, you know, touch girls and league girls and whatever. And they were like, we're going to make you professional athletes. It won them a gold medal. And last week they were on top of the winner's podium again in Dubai. Like that's what happens when you go take women and make them high performance athletes. They just become elite, you know? And so she said, there's no one playing here in Melbourne. Are you free? And on a whim, I was like, oh, I've never been to Melbourne. I've always wanted to live in Melbourne. Like I'll chase rugby again. So I just went. Packed up everything that I knew, and I joined Melbourne University Rugby Club down here and played some sevens, fell in love again, and then like doors just opened. So I moved down here, and that's when the coach of the Melbourne Rebels, Alana Thomas, she had watched me play, I guess, in the sevens, and she's like, are you sticking around for 15s? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. So again, just following my nose and my passion and like my values and what I wanted to do. And it led me to Melbourne. And since getting here, I have to say, I never thought it could get better. Like I thought playing in France was the best. And I was like, that was great. Happy to sign up. And then, you know, playing for my country. Oh, that's another amazing highlight. And then this, it's the highlight of my career again. Like I love being in this group, Melbourne. It's this sporting capital of Australia. I don't care what anyone says about Sydney. If you come to Melbourne, you'll see how they've just organized their city so that you can watch sport like 24/7 when there's no COVID.
Yeah,
you
sure.
can go to like the MCG, you can go to Amy Park, you can go to Australian Open, you can go anywhere. And they just like love it here. So it's a great environment to be in, especially as a woman these days, because you see what they're doing with the AFLW. I mean, they want to see so much sport and they don't care who's playing it.
Yeah.
And the Rebels just were that team. They were like, we need someone who has time, has passion, has energy, and like wants to lead this team. And that just happened to be me. And I think it was like a marriage, like a perfect marriage. And so far we've done so many good things. We got our very first win ever in like four seasons of the competition last year. And there was big news last week. I don't know whether you heard, but the Melbourne Rebels have become the very first rugby union franchise in the history of Australian women's rugby that are going to pay their players in the 2022 season. And that's just like...
Yeah, that was only last week.
Yeah, that was last week. And it was such an emotional announcement, because if you think about where all the past women's rugby players have come from, we used to have to pay $1,000 for the right to wear a state jersey.
Yeah.
It was the levy that like every player had. So women have funded their own high performance for so many years. And then this has come along and now we're getting paid as professional athletes. And it's just... it's groundbreaking, but we have obviously a long way to go to catch other sports.
Yeah, sure. So is it just Melbourne or is it throughout the competition now?
So at this stage, it's just Melbourne. You know, we've got, like I said, there's something about Melbourne, and I'm sure like Justin Olam and Xavier Coates will tell you about it. They just want to be the best. I mean, you've played against Melbourne Storm. They don't care. They'll 100%. Do whatever it takes, whether the... this was rugby league heartland, which it wasn't, but they were like, we're going to make it that way. And, you know, I think that's where it's going. So the CEO and the chairman were like, yep, we won't wait for anyone. We won't wait for Rugby Australia. We're just going to do it. And then everyone else can catch the wave.
Yeah. So you think the number of players potentially moving to Melbourne will increase now?
My man, I got two girls coming to stay on my couch next week. No, definitely. And get this, like, so Melbourne have, you know, been in the bottom two teams, like, in terms of wins. We only play one round of rugby every season. Like, we'll play each team once and then it goes straight to final. So it's, like, really hard to get momentum and you know, get good within a season. You know, some people can slump in the... you know, in your league, you can have like a slow start, but then like come home really fast. We can't afford to do that in our league because we only get one round.
Yeah.
But when other teams like New South Wales haven't lost, they've won every single season, 4 years, seasons in a row. Queensland always comes second. You know, Brumbies always just edging out Melbourne now by like 1 or 2 points. But the difference with Melbourne is that, like I said, they're just pumping investment into it. And we had 14 new girls start playing last year, which means that in next season and two seasons time, you're just, you know, you're going to have a whole bunch of new girls blooded when perhaps other teams are sort of have players on the way out.
Yeah.
For example. So I'm just really proud of the way Rugby Victoria and the Melbourne Rebels are just trying to, you know, give an opportunity to girls who haven't ever played rugby before.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see that, you know, rugby's moving that direction with the women's sport, because I know in league's moving forward pretty fast now, and I know the girls get looked after pretty well now, especially, you know, the NRLW. And I think recently they got announced that the girls playing in the Queensland Origin side will be getting paid either similar or exact same
amount. Yeah, man, no, they're getting parity. And I cried.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, no joke, I cried when I saw that, because how good, like... I love the way that the NRL recognized a few years ago that this is where we could capture an entire new playing group of revenue. You know, once you get girls trying to buy, you know, get into clubs at Clubland, then you've just got so many more spectators coming down to watch their daughters play as well as the Broncos.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
And then these girls are phenomenal athletes. And I tell you, there's so much crossover. So, heaps. I'm talking, I want to say like maybe close to 40% of girls playing in the NRLW have had a crack at rugby and have realized that the NRLW is going to look after them. And I do not like, I implore that. Like I would encourage that, because if they're going to look after you, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's got rent to pay, things like that. So, yeah, there's phenomenal athletes coming through in the NRLW, and I really hope that this Super W and rugby don't wait too long before they start, you know, treating girls how women how they're supposed to be treated.
I trained with a couple girls past month, 5 weeks. Paulie Aiton says Therese, she's just
she's so good. Yeah, just like a bro.
We're training with her and a couple of other girls as well. And man, they have a go away. It's hot, muggy. You're running, and Therese, yep. What do we got next? What do we got next? Let's go. I said, all right,
so
we're done
dedicated.
Now. But she was like, oh, can we just do a bit more passing and do some work out of dummy half? So she's, you know, real keen. And that's kind of, I got a little glimpse of what how keen the girls are to progress to an elite level. But to see that, I was like, man, that's, there needs to be a better pathway, I'd say. I know BHP, I think it's called, the Brisbane competition. I know they've got one for the girls, but it's a long way away till the competition starts. And I think it's great to recognise that, you know, the girls, they want to play at elite level just like the men do, especially in these types of sports, rugby and rugby union.
Yeah, absolutely. Like in rugby, I think you can play with the boys until you're about 12, and then it's completely divergent. Like that, you know, the pathway is clear. You can either do it schoolboy, or you could, you know, get picked up at club, you know, and somehow you can access the Wallabies. But for women, you literally have to, I don't know, find a club. You know, if your club, if the state that you're in isn't really great, you know, like say South Australia, I know they've got strong rugby there, but it's not as strong as New South Wales. So you've got people having to like force leave their lives just to go play in New South Wales or Brisbane.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult to find that way, that pathway for higher honours. So, yeah, no, I know Teresa and Elsie Albert and, you know, Lala, Amelia Cook was playing there a few years ago. Like there's so many talented Papua New Guinean women out there playing league, and I love watching them, and I'm still trying to poach a few over to Union, but not so successful.
Yeah, you never know, maybe one day.
Yeah.
What's your proudest moment playing rugby to date?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think maybe captaining Papua New Guinea that first time in the inaugural 15s team in Fiji. Really emotional. And you know what? Like I had just come from France where we were looked after really well. You know, we were paid to play, paid to train. We were flown or trained all the way around France and stuff like that. And then I came to the New Guinea Rugby Union, which was just starting. And I think we even flew to Fiji with no balls, like not a single rugby ball, no uniform. Like it was so humbling, but like everyone was still out there, like busting and giving their all in the hot Fiji weather as well. And, you know, it couldn't have been prouder with nothing but like the same energy from a team that I just came from that had everything to a team that really didn't have the you know, bare minimum. So that was an enormously proud moment. There's one other, sorry, I'm going to give you two.
That's all right.
One other one was I won with my club rugby in Brisbane a club premiership. So for some people, it was like, oh, yeah, that's club rugby. But if you think about it, club rugby is where you spend like 3 nights a week, 10 hours a week, like with those, you know, with that group of women, and you make your best friends. And I met my best friend there. So my best friend, a Japanese girl, she came to play rugby at a club, and we waited 8 years. So we played together 8 years at the same club team. We'd make the finals, lose, then we'd come Wooden Spoon, then we'd come somewhere in the middle of the season, then we'd like just make it and then fall out at semis. And like we waited 8 years playing at the same club together. And then in 2014, we won the grand final by 1 point. And it wasn't even about like the win, it was about the weight. And like,
Yeah.
you know, when you love something and you do it with all your best friends, I actually think proud or happy, it's just one of the best moments I've ever had on a rugby field.
Yeah, for sure. I think any age, really. I think the whole waiting and you know, doing it together as a team with your mates. I think one of my favourite moments would be our under-18s win in Lismore, because as I was playing rugby union up until that year, under 13s, 15s and 17s, we lost all the grand finals. It was like a six-year wait until we got to under 18s, and then we're like, wow, that's what that feels like.
Yeah,
but then
you wake up
the next day and you're just like, oh, get on with your day.
Still got your medal around your neck. It's so funny. Like, I've been fortunate enough to therefore win a grand final, but like, it has to be like the right group of people in that perfect team where everyone just like, you know, things have to go right for you and everyone has to be on the same page and wanting that win. So yeah, there's something special. And so you played union and you didn't want to.
I played union under 13s to under 17s. I played 1 year under 19s. But then the Titans made the move on the Northern Rivers. And they were doing a lot of recruitment in that area. And I was just by chance at my first league game, the coach, John Cartwright, was there at the time and offered me a contract. I think I had a couple of footy boots, a polo shirt and a couple of free tickets to the Titans game. And that was very hard to turn down. So I took that contract.
You know what?
On board.
The Titans are doing that now for the women. And I'm excited to say I've got some friends playing for the Titans and they got headhunted as well. So
yeah, that's
I don't
right.
know.
They
you maybe heard
too.
It here first. I think Titans are onto something NRLW 2022.
Yeah, I saw that actually. It's really good work. I want to talk a little bit about, I don't know if it's fun stuff, but I call it the rapid fire fun questions. Answer them as quick as you like or as short as you like. What's your favorite PNG dish?
Oh, you know what? Okay, so Highlander, I got to go with the mumu pig and just all the different types of kowkow. And I can't, sometimes the kowkow like sits on the stone and it gets a little burnt. Like I love that with all like the greens. But then growing up in Morobe, I love pit pit, man. Have you ever had pit pit like what? Soaked in coconut?
No, what's that?
It's I don't even know. I can't find it here in Australia. I think it's like related to the asparagus. But anyway, it's this like spongy yellow thing and it soaks up like the juice of
the
like
coconut
and oh man, chef's kiss. I miss it. Like I'll crave it. Like I'll wake up in the middle and I'm like, I need pit pit.
I was talking to Justin and Elsie. Their favorite's sweet potato on the fire. Anyway, straight off there.
So good. Nothing better. Like and it's so sweet. Like so sweet.
Yeah. I think I might have had that growing up, but it doesn't come to the front of my mind. But,
you know what it also is? It's being in the mountains with the fresh air. And it's so cold outside that the cacao is heating you from the inside.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Oh, it's so beautiful out there. The greenery flying in. And I was a bit nervous flying in the Hagen once, actually, because you're going through the thick clouds. And then as soon as you clear it, there's like, two mountains on either side of you. Like, man, how did he see that?
No, they're the best pilots in the world bar none. I'm pretty sure Emirates used to go and like headhunt pilots from PNG and take them back.
Yeah, you can see through the clouds. What's your favorite music?
I'm a 90s baby, so I love the 90s R&B, the Boyz II Men and the TLC. So anything like 90s hip hop and R&B is definitely me. But lately I love Afrobeats, man. Like Wizkid and Burna Boy and stuff.
Just a bit of rhythm,
like that rhythm. Yeah. Oi. Melbourne's been locked up for 2 years. I cannot wait to go out.
Oh, get those dance moves out there. I like listening to it too. I feel like I can dance and then while I'm cooking, I got the earpods on, and then Tenille holds the Instagram video up, zooms in on me. She starts laughing. I look over and I'm like, "You did not record that, did you?"
Cancel.
I go and
cancel.
Look at it. And I'm like, "Cross that off, right?" if there's an animal that best describes Melanie Kawa, what would that animal be?
Oh my gosh. So I remember from one of your podcasts, you said like a dog, a puppy dog.
Yeah.
That's my favorite animal, puppy dogs. But I don't know. Have you ever heard an otter? Otters like scream.
Yep.
They're like, yeah, I think that's me.
I've never heard the sound they make, but I've seen a lot of photos.
They're so cute though. When they lie on their back, they just like hold hands with their partners so they don't float away. Yeah. I love baby otters as well. And they screech. So sometimes when I'm a bit excited, I get screechy.
Favorite quote or saying that you maybe like to live by, or just that you like in general?
Oh, yeah. So I was actually talking about this with my therapist the other day. And I love the saying, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. You know, it sometimes feels like counterintuitive. You're like, but I want to be, you know, in the Wallaroos, or I want to be over here, or this isn't supposed to happen. But if you think about it, that there's nowhere else that you could be. You're literally right here, present moment. You know, even when you do get to wherever you're going to go, as soon as you're there, you'll just be exactly there. So I like reminding myself when kind of things aren't going right, or I feel as though I'm not accepting what's happening in the reality of the now, and I just say, it's all right, Mel, you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, nice. I like that one. It kind of makes you feel, I guess, grateful in a way. It gets rid of everything else that you can't control.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. When you're wanting something else to be different from whatever's now, it gives you pain or like resistance to something. Yeah,
for sure. If you could put anything on a billboard anywhere for everyone to see, what would it say on there?
You know what? I wasn't prepared for that question, but as soon as you said it, I was like, pay the girls.
Hey, that's a good one.
It goes in theme with this week, I think.
Yeah, for sure. What advice would you give to a young, driven athlete about to play in the top grade?
I think this is going to be the advice that I give to my younger self, who, you know, she wanted all these things and she thought she was good enough and whatever. I just want to, like, I would take that person or that player aside and I was like, you are good enough if you believe you're good enough. And there are so many roads that lead to the mountaintop. So if there is a team that you don't get selected for, or if there's a coach who just for some other reason, you know, you could be the best player in the team, but it doesn't fit into that coach's team, then that's okay. And you can find another way. You just have to believe in yourself and back yourself. Because I think, you know, so many people just put pressures on themselves to, I don't know, be everywhere at the same time. And they've just got to take a lot of pressure off yourself. But if you really, really want it and you really believe in yourself, you'll get it. It may take another 2 years, or you have to go via some other back road, or make 2-3 different teams to get into that team finally. But you see it all the time in professional sport. There was a player at the Melbourne Storm, I think this year, that was like, you know, 3 years ago or something, he wasn't even playing local rugby league or something. And I read his story and he just worked his way. And now he was like the most sought after player and is getting shopped around by clubs. So you just got to believe in yourself and trust that, you know, you're exactly where you're supposed to be, and you'll find a way.
Yeah. Nice. That's a great way to put it. Hey, that's a great way to give some advice for the young kids. I always tell them, especially someone who's just about to play first grade, this is the advice I got given by Ashley Harrison and a couple other older guys, actually.
Yeah.
They were kind of towards the back end of their career. They said, enjoy it, because you'll blink and it'll go like that. And honestly, it feels like that was 13, 14 years ago. And
wow.
I remember that conversation just like yesterday.
Wow. That's such a good reminder to then, like, enjoy everything. Maybe enjoy, it sounds weird, but like enjoy the tough losses for the lessons. It sounds weird, but then they're the ones that will drive you later. I like that.
Yeah.
Enjoy everything.
Yeah,
because it'll be gone soon.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts recommendations or anything before we finish up?
No, I love what you're doing here. I honestly have really enjoyed listening to some of your guests come on before, and I think this is such a lovely way to tell stories. You know, back in PNG, that's all that we do. You know, sit down, tell stories, and laugh, and like, you know, break down life, but don't think about it too seriously. And I really appreciate this sort of platform that you've done, and congratulate you for doing that, because besides being like a full-time professional athlete yourself and a dad and all these other things, you find this little project that you never know what your impact is by doing this. So thanks so much, Reedy.
Oh, thank you, Mel. That's a nice wrap. I think I'll get a couple more followers and subscribers after that, so thank you.
Oh, don't worry, I'm going to blow you up on the socials.
Awesome. Thanks, Mel. Really appreciate it.
No problem. See ya.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.